Welcome to the Shift Spotlight Podcast. I'm Winter, your host and VP of Strategy at GCE Strategic Consulting. GCE are business transformational experts that provide fractional and executive leadership services that help business owners and CEOs shift from working in the business to working on the business. Our podcast was created to celebrate CEOs, visionaries, and the EOS community, all while promoting your business to our remarkable and influential network. We are excited to celebrate your stories of change, challenge, success, and shifts you've made happen along the way. The Shift Spotlight is always looking for podcast guests. Go to shiftspotlight.com to apply today. We'd love to have you. Hey, everybody. It's Winter with the Shift Spotlight. And today I'm here with Kristen Prince. She is the principal at Prince Law Firm. That's P-R-I-N-Z. And is going to be sharing the mic with us today. So thanks so much for being here, Kristen.
Thanks, Winter. Hopefully we'll have some fun today.
Oh, I can already tell you're a fun person just for the few minutes we've already been together. But let me ask you this before we get started. If you could wake up tomorrow with any superpower, business aside, what would you pick and how would you use it?
Mind control and... I'd use it at home on my kids. I'd use it at work on my employees. I'd use it on my, there's endless uses for it. So mind control would be my superpower.
I like mind control and in general, just control, right?
Yes, exactly.
As a business owner, that's always fun. Just control. Okay. So at a high level, why don't you tell us what it is that you do?
At a high level, so this is why maybe I would choose mind control too. My husband likes to say at a high level, people pay me to tell them what to do, and I'm good at that.
That is very true. That is very true. Whenever I'm talking to an attorney, I'm like, am I being billed for this?
I do try to help people get out of their own way, though, especially in employment law, because we help executives and companies and... You know, when you're dealing with employment issues, it's so personal, like whether you started the company or you're the hired boss or whatever it is, it's so personal. And so just giving people some perspective and helping them not get into too much trouble.
And I also think with employment law, too, that like, you know, the devil's in the details with contracts. We know that I have a background in real estate. So I've done a lot of commercial. And so the devil's always in the details. But there is always this sort of gray area. And when an employee or employer thinks that something has happened and you go back and you start looking at those details, it can get really, really gray. And, you know, you're sitting there and you're like, you know, 1 hour, you're like, I'm right. He's going down. And then like 45 minutes later, you're like, that's it. I'm screwed. It's over. You know? So why is it so like that with employment law?
I mean, it's so funny because this morning I told the opposing counsel, I'm like, we wouldn't have jobs if it was clear. Right. And it's because humans, I mean, right now we're still working with humans. And even if AI is taking over all contract negotiation, AI has just taken the knowledge from humans. And humans are complicated. We make things complicated because there's emotions in everything that we do. So people always ask me, like, when I'm representing a company, well, why wouldn't the company make the smart business decision? And I always say companies are run by people. And people are just like, honestly, walking sacks of emotions. Yeah. We think we grow out of that because we're not teenagers anymore. But no, I mean, most of us are just overgrown adolescents.
It literally is. And we're so easily run by our triggers, right? Like it's like, you don't even know what can trigger you. But that's the word the kids love to use these days. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming a CEO, business leader.
Yeah, I think just like most people, my journey was I looked around and thought, oh, naively, maybe I could do this better. You know, I would be a better boss. I'd be a better business owner. And I think when you're an employee and you look at the people who are running the organization, it's always easy to see what they're doing wrong. I mean, again, this is why I have a job, because outside perspective is so useful and different. And so I think I had a lot of assumptions about how I could do things better. And essentially, I had a bunch of clients who were like, you should start your own firm. You're so good at this. And I am a really good lawyer, but I think it's very different running a business and being a boss. And I learned pretty quickly that it's much harder to be a good boss and build a business than it is to do the, or maybe for me, it's harder to be a boss than it was to just give legal advice or litigate a case, you know?
I mean, when your superpower is something that comes naturally, but being a boss is learned. And, you know, most people are not natural born leaders. I'm definitely not. And I remember when I like first started running a real estate team, like I just kind of did what I saw other people do. And I was like, oh, I need a team. I need a team name. And I'm going to have them come into the office. But like I had, and I had zero ability to really tell them what to do or how I want it done, because number one, I was a control freak and I was wanting to do everything. And then number two, it was because like it's just not in my DNA. I have 100 leader books. My husband Ken, he is a natural born leader. He's great at it. I have 100 leader books. They bore me. I don't really want to be a leader, but you know, here we are, right? So we know that
I bet
running.
you are a really good leader. So, I mean,
Depends on the day.
yeah,
But
exactly.
it is hard being a boss. I agree. And it is hard to pull out of your employees what you want to see them do because they're not inside of your head that's just running, you know, a million miles an hour. So
Yeah, most entrepreneurs see like a vision and are like, go do that. Like, get here. You're starting at A and I want to go to Z. And I am not good at breaking it down into like, okay, then, you know, walk 50 feet and turn left and having every step laid out. I see where we want to go. And I can't believe you don't see that, but
And that is
it's
literally it,
there.
right? Like it's like, why aren't you doing it? You know, and we hear GCE, we work with a lot of CEOs, and like we hear all the time, it's like, why don't my employees see it the way I do? You know, and like, why don't they get it? It's very simple, you know, and why aren't they working as hard as me? You know, but it's nobody's gonna run your company the way you do. So so we've already started diving into it. We know running a business is hard. So we are going to talk about some of those mistakes, but before we do that, tell us something that you did right.
I hired great people and I learned that over a number of years. So we spend a lot more time on the front end making sure that the person is the right culture fit. We operate on EOS. And even though I'm very impatient and actually sometimes EOS even annoys me, it makes other people on my leadership team feel more comfortable. It provides some guardrails for me so that I don't go off the rails. So I think I've done that right. Definitely trusting other people. And yeah, still like I don't know, being really good at like meeting people and bringing in business and honestly, like I give really good legal advice, so I do think I train my team well, even if I'm not always a good boss.
And hey, look, we can't have it all, right? That's why you have good people to help with that. So your firm specifically works with SMBs, professionals, physicians. What unique challenges do you see in that niche that like most law firms aren't addressing?
I mean, maybe other law firms are addressing this. I do think that we understand that human aspect. In fact, I ran into a client in a public function recently, and this person was telling other people, oh, yeah, Kristen's office really understands the personal side of things that, like, that decision making that goes on in business is not actually, people are full of it when they're like, it's business, it's not personal, because it's so personal.
Because it's your
And
baby.
yeah, exactly. So I think we really understand that and we're very pragmatic. I mean, you don't go to a lawyer to just tell you all the things you can't do or all the ways you're going to get screwed in a deal. Hopefully, you're going to the lawyer so that they can tell you how to best protect yourself without also making things overcomplicated or blowing up a relationship or things like that. So.
Well, and sometimes the best thing for you is to concede, you know, and
Yeah.
that's hard when you're in a situation like that. But I know when I'm in those situations, I just want to be told the truth. And if it's not worth the fight, then
Yeah.
let's fold, you know, and that's where you have to put the ego aside. But that's probably why you're paid well, is because the ego just keeps creeping
The
up.
ego does keep, okay. But the ego is very, very dangerous. I like to tell people that when I've had situations where I just know where I've already told the person you're not going to get anything, and this could actually get worse if you engage a lawyer, and then they keep coming back and they're like, oh, I'm sure you could do it. I'm sure, you know, I do have that ego where I'm like, oh, I bet you I'm the only one who could help you.
Totally.
I'm the only person who could solve this
Nobody
situation.
can write this stipulation better than me. You
Yes,
know,
exactly.
I do that on my contracts all the time. You are fun. Gosh, an attorney,
Thanks.
that's fun. That's refreshing. No, I'm kidding. I love my attorneys, and there's a very big need for you in every world. But so you work closely with businesses on employment issues, compliance, and culture. So how have you seen strong workplace culture reduce legal risk? And conversely, like, what cultural red flags almost always are going to signal trouble ahead?
Oh, I love it. You're throwing out the like new lingo with the red flags, right? Okay, so I think culture makes a huge difference in that if you have a place where people can like voice their concerns, where they feel comfortable saying this happened and it made me uncomfortable, you're just having less claims because most times lawsuits come because of small, you know, I know the prior term was microaggressions, but it really is true that, you know, people will put up with things for a certain amount of time. They won't say anything because they think that the culture requires them not to say anything. But in a good culture, somebody will say, "Hey, that's my line. I don't feel comfortable with that. That's not funny," or "Please don't sit on my
Talk about my
desk."
red hair.
Yeah,
I
like
get
please don't.
it.
Exactly. Please don't stare at me, you
I
know, weird things like that. Whereas I think in a bad culture, people are afraid to say anything and they're actually like plotting against you. In a bad culture, people are keeping a log of like every microaggression or every little like misstep that you made. And then all of a sudden, later on, when you realize like this isn't a good fit and you go to let them go, they have this litany of, okay, and you did this to me and you did this
You
to
did
me.
that.
And
Yes.
yeah.
Yes. Totally.
So
Yeah.
if you
And
can figure that out earlier and like build a good culture, I think you'll have a lot less of that.
I also think just saying, I'm sorry, I've never asked how you feel about the culture here. You know, I'm sorry are two words that are excellent conversation starters, and it instantly disarms anybody. And it's just, you know, I'm sorry, I've never even checked in to see, you know, what you thought. That could completely turn somebody around that's been stacking those grievances and say, well, maybe I've got this pegged a little wrong, you
I
know?
love that I love that you're saying that because I think people don't want to apologize. They feel like an apology is like a conceding, it's an admission. It's saying I did something wrong. And I'm like, well, everybody does something wrong, you know?
And I'm sorry I've not asked you this question, but is there anything, you know, whatever, it actually disarms the person to be able to want to speak about those things. And it does help you as the owner or, you know, leader in that role, because leadership teams experience this too, you know, figure out if there's something that you can course correct before it turns, you know, bloody.
You know, it's so funny. My office, one of the attorneys especially, she manages what we call culture audits, where instead of waiting till somebody makes a complaint and doing an investigation, we will interview team members. It's basically like getting quantitative data. So let's say you notice that your scores in a survey have gone down on a specific team, you could call us in. So we did this for a company, for a large company, and they were wondering, they were having a lot of problems with this team. They didn't know why. They thought it was one thing. Anyway, once we dug in, the real problem was a workflow problem. It was nobody was asking them. Essentially, what was happening is assignments were coming in, and then they were just going to a couple members of the team. So those members of the team thought that they had to do the work because it was coming to them. And they saw that this other half of the team was basically doing nothing. Like they had no work.
Right,
And
right.
this part of the team was overworked. And it really just came down to a systems problem, but it probably could have become a complaint. Somebody would have said that they were mistreated through that process, where it wasn't like discrimination. And the fact that we did it early, when we didn't wait for a claim, they were able to solve it.
I mean, and that I'm going to just say, I love the idea of the culture audits. GCE, one of the things they do when they go into a client is they will provide like a sales audit, a marketing audit, an operations, a process audit. And it kind of it's like a three six it's like a integrative sort of experience. But nobody's talking about culture audits. And that's like such an important thing,
We're
especially right
trying.
now.
We're trying to get people to talk about it because it is so important right
Well, we're
now.
gonna definitely talk about it. More because like I honestly think that might go into one of the questions I asked you earlier, which was what are some of the things you're doing that maybe other law firms aren't doing. I mean, I think that's a really unique thing that maybe not everybody looks at.
Yeah, we're trying to be innovative with that because honestly, I don't. Clients don't like to litigate. I don't care if you're the individual or a company. Why would you want to be in a fight with somebody where you have to keep reliving the same issue over and over? Because I'm telling you, litigation, especially post-COVID, it lasts years,
Yeah.
many years,
Yeah.
many more years than you think it should, and definitely many more years than you would want to be involved in it. So,
It doesn't even matter if you're right, I'm held to ethics in what I do. And so like I remember an agent violated some ethics and I turned her in. I was like, I'm gonna be right. And I mean, I had to go to like the court of realtors, and it's a body of your peers, but like I mean, I had 138 pages of all the reasons I was right. But the whole week leading up to it, my stomach was upset. I felt sick, whatever. I left. She got a $100 fine and a slap on the wrist, and it was not worth it. Being right, and that's one of my journeys and lessons I've had to learn as I grow up is do you want to be right or do you want to be happy?
Yes.
And sometimes that being right really gets me in some trouble, but I've gotten much better.
I mean, yes, being a lawyer, sometimes wanting to be right definitely gets you in trouble. I've also actually learned early on from a client who had a really great claim. Like there was definitely a contractual issue, and he could have gotten a lot of money. Anyway, we came up with a good resolution. He was happy, but what he said to me was, when I said, "Why don't you want to fight this? Like we could really do a lot more." And he's like, the best revenge is just having a great life. And
That's
that's what
true.
I'm going to do. I'm going to go
Yeah.
on and have a great life. You
That's
know?
true. And he probably
He
has a
did.
great
I've
life.
stayed in touch with him and he has had a great life. So, great career, great life. Yeah, all of it. And
Right.
I've seen other people get like so bogged down in the fight
Yeah.
that they actually miss out on so many other opportunities, you
Yeah.
know?
Totally. Totally.
Hi, I am Ken Paskins, the CEO of GCE Strategic Consulting. After decades of helping companies from pre-revenue startups to Fortune 50 giants, I wanted to create something that every leader could use right now. That's why we built the CEO Navigator. It is a custom GPT that helps you uncover real root causes of business challenges, build a focused 90-day plan, and even expose blind spots across your business that you don't yet see coming. This is not just artificial intelligence. It's built upon decades of proven operator experience, distilled in a tool that you can start using today. To explore further, please go to gcestrategicconsulting.com/CEO-navigator-GPT and see for yourself how it can help you lead with clarity and confidence.
So, shifting gears a little bit, how many employees do you have?
We have 20 people, including me.
And no of your employees have ever tried to sue an employment owner, right? I'm just kidding. I'm just
I'm
kidding.
just kidding. I did have one person threaten something on the way
Like,
out,
that would
but
be like the
it
craziest thing ever,
was.
right? It's like, no, I'm not messing with this one.
I mean, I'm actually like, I've also learned, this sounds bad, but I've learned to separate, I'm going to use the right word, separate employment in a way that's like as respectful as possible because, that's good for me and that's good for them too.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So pretty sizable amount of employees. How do you foster your own strong company culture, especially when you're like in periods of growth or high volume periods?
I don't know if we could swear on this podcast, but I was
Oh, we
just
can
telling
swear on this
my
podcast. It's
husband,
fine.
okay, good, because I just told my husband this week, I'm like, sometimes I look around at this culture and I'm like, I'm the only asshole here.
But you know what? At least you're emotionally intelligent enough to be aware of it.
Yeah, that's true. I think people probably don't forgive you for being emotionally intelligent if you still continue to be an asshole, but I try. I really do try. No, my partner Amit does most of the like people management, so I think I've learned my best skills, and so that was like one big thing. I'm much more focused on vision and where we're going and the things that I think like where's the market going? One of the reasons why we started doing culture audits is because I thought people used to just deny, 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 and like pretend or put their head in the sand and pretend that there's no issue. Like you kind of all know, humans are like when they said, what's that saying? Bees and dogs smell fear. Humans smell it too. Like it's in our bones. But yet a lot of times we ignore all of those signs. And I'm saying, no, let's just bring it out into the open so we could address it instead of waiting until you're being sued. And I do think that people are ready for that, that is like the zeitgeist now, that people want to know what the problem is and they want it addressed, right?
Well, and I think that it used to be, I'm the boss. I pay you the paycheck. You do what I do and you shut your mouth, And it's not like that. And it can't be like that anymore. And like now, the guy or gal cutting the paycheck is having to go, I really have to think about what they want instead. And it's a real kind of, I always, go back to, I can re relate everything to dating at some level, but it's like, it's that having to completely change yourself to find the right person, and work on yourself before you find the love of your life. Like that's what it has to be. And the number one complaint we hear on the show is we hired wrong. We didn't know what to do. We recruited wrong. And that's a lot of what GCE solves. But I really think that like, when you start to look at it from that lens, things really start to change.
I agree. No, and I think, and maybe you came up with this too, but for a lot of attorneys in my like who came up the same way I did, you came up with bosses who kind of acted like that. Like, you're lucky to be here.
Yeah, you're
You
lucky you got a
need
job.
to give your life to this firm. I always tell people that one of the firms, one of my bosses, I had asked him, like, why don't we do more to keep paralegals? And he's like, Kristen, employees are like toilet paper. You use up a roll and
Wow.
then you get another.
Yeah.
And yeah.
This market has been very challenging for that toilet paper, though, I will tell you that.
Yes, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, it's just a bad thing because honestly, I was an employee when he told me that. So I'm like, well, okay. And nobody stayed. It was a revolving door. It wasn't like, and the fact is, I think all the research shows that to hire someone, like if you're paying someone $100,000, it's going to cost you $150,000 to replace them, and that's not even the cost of like the recruiting and that's just cost of training that person.
The cost of retention is so substantially in an owner's favor as opposed to the cost of turnover and a revolving door. So what excites you about your company or industry?
It's constantly changing, so it's keeping us on our toes. There's new laws. I mean, even though right now, like the federal laws are maybe even going away, I don't know. The state laws are increasing, and generally, like people have more requirements that they need to comply with at work. So it's like a, there's never a single day that's the same. And I feel like I have a bit of ADHD, so it works out well for me that I don't know what's going to happen on any given day.
And I mean, I've spoken to an immigration attorney before, and she said, you know, her job just completely changes depending who's in office. Is that similar in your world?
No, but I will say that right, so it's kind of an anomaly right now, but there are less laws being enforced. There's less, especially on, yeah, on the federal level. So, but then there's also worse behavior being accepted. So I think there's just more claims. People are more willing to fight. So we're definitely really busy because there's just a lot of uncertainty. And even one of my friends, she is a CEO of a not-for-profit. She was like, listen, everybody I ask is saying they're having weird HR problems. And I'm like, yeah, because people are scared. You have AI, you have all these geopolitical things going on. And when there's uncertainty, humans just don't behave well. We want some like certainty on a day-to-day basis, you
It
know?
literally, yeah, it feels like Mercury in retrograde, like
Yes,
constantly when those things start to
exactly.
happen, you know? I'm glad you know it. I was like, sometimes you can throw that out there and people don't know what you're talking about.
No, I definitely know. Yes.
Okay, just a few more questions here. So, where do you see yourself investing resources for growth over the next year? Are you in a growth projection? Are you
No.
happy where you are? What are your plans?
We're definitely hiring, you know, more senior attorneys because I think there's more complicated issues. And at the same time, I think we are using more technology, just finding ways to create efficiencies with AI. We're not using AI though for legal advice. I think a lot of attorneys are getting in trouble because they are relying too much
Absolutely.
on AI. But for efficiencies, I mean, if you're not using it, I think you're going to fall behind.
And I have seen where AI has been completely inaccurate, you know. Like I invested in this conservation easement, and so I uploaded it and I'm asking it some questions and things like that. And it missed where I paid on my taxes. It's like, oh, you're gonna owe this, but it missed it. And I was like, no, you need to look at this. And it's somebody said, and I don't know if this is true, but like when AI doesn't know the answer, they just make it up.
Oh, that's, yeah, I think that is true.
And
Well,
so
I
it's
said, I'm
like,
like, it's kind of like if you have a dumb friend who sometimes says something really smart, we are sometimes there's good ideas that come out of AI, but if you're relying on it, I don't know. I think you're making a big mistake. Maybe in a
agree.
year from now, it will be completely accurate. I don't know. But right now, no, for sure, it's
And
not.
I have heard attorneys specifically be like, I will not even touch it because there is like you could like you could worst case lose your license
Yes.
by giving
No.
advice. Yeah.
In court cases, there are rulings coming out literally every day sanctioning attorneys who used AI and cited made-up cases, just fiction. So.
That's hilarious. And didn't even cross-reference it, right?
No, and they're like attorneys who are
They're
at
like attorneys.
huge, well-known firms. And yeah, they are putting their license on the line, filing. Yeah, because and part of it is I understand they feel like, okay, this is a more efficient way to do this, and clients, there's more pressure probably from clients to be quicker because we have clients all the time send us letters that ChatGPT drafted, and they're like, can you just sign your name and send this out?
Oh my
Like, no.
gosh. Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, and so what is a resource or book or anything that's helped you along your journey that you would recommend to another CEO?
Oh, so many books. So, from a nonfiction standpoint, I would say The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leaders. I feel like that has helped me
Haven't heard
so
that one.
much. Yeah, it's a good one. It just there's a lot of like human behavior in that, and then also The Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. That is also just because, again, I think understanding humans is going to be the most important thing to do in the future because
Totally.
AI can do so much of everything else.
Yeah.
So having some like knowledge about behavioral economics and then actually read fiction, read any fiction,
Yeah.
just have imagination. And I think people are not reading enough fiction who lead companies.
Oh, I'm like a nonfiction, like it's crazy. It's like you go in my Audible when I'm in the car or whatever, and it is true. It you should. I actually did read a fiction book that my girlfriend turned me on to. She let me borrow it. It was like some fantasy dragon something. It was awesome. You know, it was like a page turner. You really wanted to just, it was nice to not always be in business mode.
Yes. And I think stepping away from that just like they say, oh, work on the business, not in the business.
Right.
Having some space where you're doing something else, it helps your brain. You come up
Yeah.
with good ideas.
Yeah. Okay, and last question. If you had to do it all over again, speaking to a younger self, a less experienced self, what would your advice be?
I would say what my 12-year-old daughter says, which is, most of us are just getting in our own way. So just, or maybe Nike, just do it,
Just do
just
it.
try it because I think that saying that you regret the things that you don't do more than you regret the things that you do is
Right.
really important.
I love that. This was such a great, fun podcast. You are an attorney that brings like energy and fun.
Thank you.
I should have been an
You make it
attorney.
easy.
Thank you. I should have been an attorney. I actually studied at Florida State, which I know is a big law school.
I feel
But
like you should have been an attorney. You're
I
basically
oh.
reviewing contracts and you
Yeah.
litigated your own case,
And I also like I will go in real estate closings with attorneys and they'll say something and I'm like, no, that wasn't right. Like I know more than some of the attorneys, not all of them,
Pay a lot more than
but
that.
where what college you go to? I'm just curious.
I went to University of Iowa. I actually wanted to be a fiction writer.
Ah, there you go. Well, there it ties it all back together. Well,
Yeah.
this was super fun. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks, Winter. This is awesome. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the Shift Spotlight podcast. If you are a business owner, CEO, founder, visionary, or of the EOS community seeking recognition for your exceptional expertise while gaining exposure through our remarkable network, we are actively searching for podcast guests who can bring their inspiring stories to light, and we'd love to showcase your journey. Please visit shiftspotlight.com to apply today. And if you are a listener, I'd love to give a shout out to your business to our whole audience for free. All you have to do is leave a review on Apple Podcasts or follow our newsletter on LinkedIn by searching GCE Strategic Consulting. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. We believe that every person has a message that can positively impact the world. We love our community who listens and shares our program, so hit subscribe to be inspired and motivated. I promise to bring positivity and inspiration to you and your growing business. We will see you next time.